Well, you need like a catchy first line, like "Hello, Chess NYC community and
no,
chess
it's not
world.
Chess NYC. It's Hello World.
Well, then, fine, but you got you have to have some sort of intro.
Hello, world. We've got a crazy story to tell. Welcome to Chess is Dead. The entire existence of Chess NYC itself is a funny story. It's an exciting story. It's an important story. It's a story of enrichment. It's a story of value. But the whole thing is funny, how it all occurred, what we're doing, you know, how I'm here after never having been a chess player, how I'm here to talk about chess being dead, and that's what actually attracted me to the game.
The big question that we're always asked is, why chess? Why do we get into that game of all?
That is a question that I ask myself. I got in chess. You know, my background, as you know, is had very little to do with chess. I was involved in sports. I was a former New York City school board president. And at the time, about 12 years to 14 years ago, I don't even know exactly, I was running AAU basketball teams, had a whole bunch of them. And I was getting ready to interview a coach. A parent had introduced me to a coach that was coaching his son in a school, in a private school, that he thought would be a good addition to our team.
So for AAU basketball.
Yeah. I wanted to interview him and kind of bring him into to the basketball teams, give him a team to coach. And in my meeting with him, over the time that we were talking, it became pretty clear to me he didn't want to talk to me about basketball. He had this thing called New York City Chess, Inc., this asset, this corporation. And what New York City Chess, Inc. at the time was, two guys sitting on the corner of 112th and Broadway selling books and T-shirts. It wasn't a real business. It was a phenomenal corporate name. I don't know how the kid got it, but he did. So the basketball, I had a cooperative relationship with a community organization. And the truth of the matter is it was a rev share. And at the end of the first season, I had made so much money, they couldn't write the check. We settled and I moved on. I decided not to do AAU basketball anymore. And I was looking at what this kid had in chess. And having been in the school system, I said, you know what, if you're willing to do this and get involved in schools and some of the things that I think we can have a pathway towards success, I will buy into Chess NYC. I will become a 50% partner in New York City Chess, and I will lead you there.
Just to clarify to any listener who doesn't know, what exactly is a rev share?
Rev share means we split the profit. We split the profit. It was too painful for them. I had a lot of teams. I don't think they had any idea how many we have, but I don't want to, I'm not here to blow my horn as much as talk about chess. So this guy selling books and T-shirts on the corner, I bought into him and, we worked together for a little while. To cut off and not go on a tangent, that's why chess and how we got involved in chess. It was an opportunity. I saw how underdeveloped it was. It's ridiculously small in this country. It is ridiculously dead in this country. People that play it think it's substantial, but it's not. And seeing things on a broader vision, I got involved in chess because I saw an opportunity. I saw a great game that I thanked that kid for teaching me. A great game, a really exciting, heart-pounding, adrenaline-filled game that too few people know about. And I decided that chess needed some normality in it. Chess needed a reasonable voice to try to bring it to the next level. And that's the beginning of the end of chess in our family. That's how it all started.
So if chess is so dead, where do you get the money to live an actual life in New York City, which is, for all intents and purposes, the most expensive city in the world to live in?
That's a really good question. I guess the best way to describe that is chess players that conventionally taught chess or chess players and did like these little small chess businesses, if they ever get hit by a bread truck, they're out of business. You know, they can't get back to a school to teach it. Running Chess NYC and developing teams and doing what we did made it a sustainable business. There is no money whatsoever in chess. It is dead. However, the potential for the growth in chess is probably larger than any other game in the world, or certainly in the United States of America. What it's doing today should not even be remotely close to what it does in the next 10 years. Chess is it's a real opportunity, not for the chess community. They've already done what they've done to it. But chess is a real opportunity and it's been very good to me financially. It's been very good to a lot of people that work for us financially.
So do you think that being a person who actually is not a good chess player at all has helped contribute to the growth of your company, as seeing it in a view of somebody who has no actual chess knowledge? They don't just care about the game?
Somewhere between 1,000,000 and 5,000,000%, yeah. My viewing of it, or my reception of lessons as a student, gives me the ability to teach teachers how to teach, to change some of the sequence in teaching, and to make them make sense. The average chess player sits down and teaches someone with a tremendous passion for the game. The player, the coaches or the teachers of chess, they really love their game. Give them credit there. They killed the game, but they really love the game, which is totally oxymoronic. But they teach these kids chess, and they do it in their language the way they learned it, and without any compassion or any peripheral vision to kind of move in step if something has to be changed, or to adapt to a kid, or get a kid fired up to play. They've got to share that love. They've got to generate that love from the student. They don't automatically have it when you meet them. So when I went out there as a student, I could tell the coach, whoa, stop. I'm already glassy-eyed. Let's talk more about this. And I could teach them as a student how to teach the game of chess. And frankly speaking, outside of tactical chess, which I'm not qualified to teach, outside of tactical chess to make them diabolical beings on the boards, I am, in my opinion, Chess NYC and Michael Proper are probably the best teachers of chess, introduction of the game of chess, that the world has ever seen. Because we have Americanized the game rather than trying to chessify the game. We've Americanized it. We do things differently than it was done before. We do things better.
So how do you introduce the game to that level of player or coach while trying to incorporate fun and getting kids engaged as well? Has it been easy to get the chess community to buy in, specifically the teachers, the really high-level players? Has it been easy to get them to buy in to your vision of chess?
It is very difficult to get them to buy in. We have a balance of coaches, and we're in a lot of different ventures. We're not just Chess NYC anymore, and we'll talk about all that here. But it's been very difficult. The conventional coach that learned the old way, the old school coach, is very difficult to retrain. It's worth it, so we do it. But we have a balance of coaches. We've got young kids that are recreational players that enjoy teaching and playing the game and enjoy the presence of children, which, by the way, is pretty important if you're going to teach them. We have high-level coaches that are, you know, credentialed, that are outstanding coaches. And we've got everything in between, you know, expert-level players and things like that. It is interestingly enough, the longer you play, the harder it is to impact you. But to their credit, those that are at Chess NYC today have all embraced it. One of the guys that works with us, who was probably the worst coach, one of the worst coaches we ever had in the beginning, and resisted every single thing that we tried to get him to do to bring his country's mentality into this country and teach the game, resisted every turn, fought tooth and nail, and I think literally hated me for like 4 years. Now here we are about 6-7 years later, he's one of our best coaches. And I think he and I probably have the closest father-son relationship of any coaches and I have in the company. He's one of the best that we have. And he came to an epiphany when he realized that, you know, this guy knows what he's talking about. You know, I'm a coach. I coach sports. Okay. I teach competitive skills, not tactical chess skills. And I teach fundamental skills. And I teach in chess fundamental teaching. And once they embrace it, once they jump all over it, It's a home run. But yeah, no, they don't roll over and just automatically accept what we tell them we want them to do.
So what exactly do you mean by Americanized? Because some people could see that potentially as an insult. But I think specifically when you talk about things like play and go, when you get into the definition of that and why it works, it's something that people should know about.
It is insulting to the chess player, because difference between historical chess and where it was so strong for so long and chess in the United States is the children here have a lot more choice time. They have a lot more, they have the ability to pick and choose what they want to do. They can say, I want to play more chess or I don't want to play more chess, and they'll engage in another activity. Coaches have to sell the game to the children. Coaches have to get the kids involved and excited to play in the game. What do we do to Americanize the game? We play a shorter version. We play the shortest version that FIDE, which is the European governing body, and USCF, which is the United States Chess Federation, our governing body, the shortest game that they will consider a classic time control. So we'll play a shorter game and more of them in a short period of time to have these kids playing in games and having an opportunity to have fun in a shorter game. I don't think any kid, or I shouldn't say that, 7% of the kids will sit down and play for 2.5 to 3 hours one game. 90% will play a 20-minute game or a 25-minute game or a 30-minute game. By starting with the shorter game, the 20, 30-minute game, you accommodate that 7%. They shouldn't be neglected. That 7% that want to play that longer, classic Fischer-Spassky game, you get to them, but you get to them by introducing a much larger number of them to a shorter version of the game. That's just a natural progression.
What are the biggest challenges in your quest for Americanization of the game of chess? Is there ever pushback from parents, coaches, U.S. chess, for example, because we go to cities, for example, and those can be a lot longer games. I mean, coming from personal experience, having coached at them many times, the kids walk in at like 7 a.m. and they don't leave until like 8 o'clock at night.
First of all, those tournaments are torture, and we'll get into that another time. And they're another reason that we're involved in the business to the extent that we are. Repeat the question.
What are your biggest challenges in your quest to Americanize the game? Is there pushback from specific members of the chess community outside of the obvious?
Okay. I can answer that really well. We went in with chess is definitely dead. I want to make that really clear. It's not just a name. And we're reviving it. First of all, when we went into the business way back in the beginning, we tried to embrace the chess community. And they were so difficult and they were so unpleasant that yes, we met resistance, and we really have no relationship with them now. And it's not our fault. We wanted one. We entered it and said, hey, you guys are in chess. I can't teach chess. You could teach chess. You really know the game. You have a knowledge I don't possess. I'm going to rock this game, but you have a knowledge that I don't possess, and I want to work with you. And I like to think I'm a pretty nice guy and that we're all nice people. So we went directly to them first. We didn't avoid them. We didn't come out to harm them. We came into this business to join them and to give them a bigger market share and to change things that if they worked with us cooperatively would have really impacted their businesses too and their chess community would be much, much larger. But we met huge resistance and they're very unkind. And I would say that the chess community is largely the least pleasant community I've ever come across in my life. Now, there are some people that we'll talk about during these podcasts in the chess world that hold significant places that are not good people, are outstanding people. But 99% of what we met in chess, I don't have the time of day for anymore. They're just horrible, horrible people, whether on different levels. Do parents resist? No, parents don't resist. Sometimes parents will make recommendations or requests to get their kids to play longer and do more. But no, I would say parents are largely cooperative. And I would say because of the way we approach it, kids are cooperative. It has not been hard to come in this business and be the biggest in New York City in a very short period of time by a non-chess player. It was not difficult to take the market share that we already have. And if we've had 0.02% of our potential growth, it's a lot. I mean, the whole world is our oyster. It's right in front of us. It's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But the resistance was only from the chess community. And that should tell you an awful lot. It's their game. It was their opportunity. It was a chance for them to yield growth. And they just completely resisted any type of change whatsoever. They completely resisted expedition of games. They resisted everything. They resisted pizza in an after-school program. I mean, they didn't appreciate anything we did to entertain children beyond learning the game. And if they're entertained, they'll learn the game. If they learn the game, they can play the game. And if they play the game and we put them in front of our top-level coaches, diabolical teachers, we'll make monsters out of them.
So I won't go into the 1% of chess players that you no. are a big fan of, because I'm pretty sure you want to have them on here personally.
That's a whole episode.
So where does your vision end? Where do you see yourself, and where do you see Chess NYC going the next, I don't know, 20 years?
I don't know. I mean, I see growth every year, you know, 50 to 150% year over year. I don't see that stopping. I see opportunities, you know, a lot of different opportunities. I think the online world is another area that the chess world is resistant to, even though they can't help but play it. And it's undercapitalized on, and we're taking some big steps in that market. Some really big steps that, again, I'll share in a different podcast. I don't want to stay on too long here today. I just want to explain why we're here and what we're going to be talking about. I think I see us growing 50 to 150% year over year forever. I don't see that stopping. I am, as I like to say, in my fourth quarter of life. I am the early part of the fourth quarter. I've done a lot of things. This is my last gig. This is the last thing I'm going to do, but it actually, and it absolutely is the best thing I ever did. I can leave a positive impact when I'm done here. And that's, I think the future of Chess NYC is to continue to grow for the next 5 to 10 years, and for me to figure out how to leave the legacy here, how to leave Chess NYC in place so that everybody continues to work, everybody continues to grow, and we see, you know, we make chess in the United States. We make the game here what soccer achieved in the 80s. That's really my goal. Soccer came in here. Nobody played soccer. I think chess is the next soccer in the United States. If given it in our hands, I think chess is the next soccer. Give it back to the old chess world, I think chess is even more dead. But the tremendous opportunity, and I see. The sky is the limit for what we can do with this in the future. We proved it. We had a lot of fun with it. We sustained it. And I think the next step is to just, you know, take it as far to the moon and back. There's no limit to what we can do here.
Okay. And then I guess just the last question, honestly, because it seems to be a good wrap-up point, is give everybody a quick summary of yourself. What have you done to lead you to this point? Because, I mean, we discussed how you found chess, but chess didn't find you 60 years ago. Like, you've had some time on Earth to do other things.
Chess didn't find me because the guy that tried to teach me chess when I was a kid, it took me 9 minutes. No, I didn't want to spend my 10th minute with him. And I didn't do anything in chess as a kid. Who am I? I grew up in New York. I was in business my entire life. I've done everything from retail stores around the city. I owned a phone company. I played ball, played a little college ball. Had to stop playing to go to work when I was 15. I had to move out of my mom's house, and I was in business at a very, very young age. I was a solo act at a very, very young age, but I was in business also at a very young age. I've done a lot of different business that I've been involved in. As I grew up, I married my childhood sweetheart at a very, very young age. I'm almost married almost 40 years now, and I'm not 109, okay? But I'm married almost 40 years. I'm very loyal. My family is the singly most important thing in the world to me. I think that loyalty is the singly most important thing in the world to me altogether. If you are my friend or my colleague or my teammate, I will take a bullet for you. I am not an turn the other cheek kind of guy. I'm an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth kind of guy. If you harm me, you will never get a second opportunity to. That I will cut you off. And I think it's a character flaw, but it's mostly about the fact that I think I'm so good to you, and I'm so nice, and I'm so kind that if you violate that, I'm done. I mean, I'm out. I'm a competitor. I love sports. I love kids. I adore kids. I love teaching kids to be better at the end of the session than they were when it started. And I'm really, I mean, that's pretty much who I am, you know, without getting to too specific stuff. I'm a very happy man. I'm a very happy guy, and I'm very lucky that I fell into chess, because the state of chess is just what was just deplorable. Chess is dead.
So thank you so much for making it to this point in the podcast. Feel free to follow us on all of our socials. They'll be linked down in the description below. Would you care to give the audience some cheesy, deep statement that would be right inside of your wheelhouse before we get out of here?
Not a big believer in the cheesy. I don't know that I have the depth for a big statement, but I will explain to you the direction of the game. I will explain to you some incredible stories that occurred in the game of chess. It is a tremendous, tremendous game, and it is shameful the way it has been treated in this country. And I am very excited to make sure that we change that. And we are on a small scale now, but it's only just begun. I don't really have a whole lot more depth for you than that.
Okay, I guess that counts as deep enough. If you're still around, make sure to check us out as we lay out the true future of chess in the USA. And stick around, we'll see you next week.
Hi, my name is Michael Proper, and this is my son, Alan. This podcast is going to explain to you how we got here, how I, Chess NYC, New Millennium Chess, and a few other really exciting upcoming programs got started, and how we became so successful in such a highly unsuccessful game. What, good?
That was good.